Hi, this is Brian with the Spain Domain, and we are back with episode 10 of our series called Spanish History 101. We've finally reached double digits, but let's just say that we've got a long way to go, considering we haven't even left Roman times. In the previous episodes, we looked at how the Romans contributed many important changes in Hispania, namely the language, but also religion, law, infrastructure, towns and cities, to name just a few. And we said that this whole process, which was so complete and so thorough, came to be known as the Romanization of Hispania, and it left an indelible mark on almost every aspect of life here. But what we don't often do is pause to consider just what these territories did for the Romans, which in many ways was a lot. And that's sort of normal because what else would you expect? The Romans weren't inclined to take over lands that couldn't serve them in other ways. They obviously wanted to benefit from this. And even though that didn't always work out for the Roman Empire, in Hispania's case, they basically struck gold, quite literally. One of the reasons the Romans took an interest in Spain was because of its plentiful reserves in precious metals. Loads of loads, if you'll pardon the play on words. Now, this was not anything they themselves discovered. This was something that had been known about and exploited since the arrival of the Phoenicians centuries before. But as with so many other aspects of their push towards settling in this land, the Romans took it all to another level. Recent studies have revealed literally hundreds of locations where mining took place. Gold was a major attraction, as it is today. And though it is believed that the amount extracted was not as great as commonly told, which sounds like they were in just ungodly amounts, places like Las Médulas yielded possibly as much as 5 tons of gold a year, and in 250 years of use, some 1.6 million kilograms are estimated to have been obtained. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, Las Médulas is the biggest, or was the biggest, and most famous gold mine in the peninsula. It's up in the province of León. Today, it's a popular tourist attraction because of its beauty, the landscapes, the powerful red clay hillsides contrasting with the beautiful deep green vegetation. And you can walk along the area and through tunnels and along paths and learn a little bit about how the Romans mined in this area. The striking appearance is an impressive sight, but in reality, it represents the awful consequences of the unbridled exploitation of natural resources and widespread environmental destruction. Basically, the Romans flushed the gold out. And while this is an ingenious technique from a mining perspective, the ecological footprint was enormous. The Romans themselves were unabashed about the strategy, actually referring to it as mountain destroying, or ruina montium in Latin. And the fact that the effects are still visible today after nearly 2,000 years is testament to the level of harm inflicted. It was designated a UNESCO World Heritage Site many years ago, but as you can imagine, the decision was quite understandably controversial. In any event, as for other types of metals or precious metals, silver was a long-time popular metal. Much of it went towards making coins. This is an ironic when you think that 1500 years later, the Spanish themselves would be working people hard and working hard themselves to track down silver mines all over the New World. And in places like Potosí in Bolivia, they would satiate their desires. Back in Hispania during the Roman period, the mining of silver would go on for centuries. Other minerals and metals included iron, copper, and zinc, and then you had lead from Almeria, and a mineral called gypsum, which was used for construction, especially window-like structures. Agriculture was another extremely important sector. Nowadays, many refer to North Africa as the true breadbasket of the Roman Empire, but there is no denying that Hispania was also a major supplier and at times the biggest exporter. Cereals, grains were important, very important, but it seems that olive oil and wine stood out above all others. Spanish olive oil was often exported to the finest tables in Rome and nearby cities and even around the empire. The olive oil from the Bética province, which is basically Andalusia today, was said to be the most highly valued and was transported to practically every corner of the empire. An estimated 30 million amphoras, or clay containers, were exported, and archaeologists have discovered remains of these amphoras, sometimes intact and sometimes just pieces of them, all over Europe and beyond to the Middle East and even as far as India. Bética's biggest competitor was Tunisia, and over the centuries, the two would jostle back and forth for supremacy of the olive oil market. Wine has always been an inextricable part of Roman life and culture. It already existed in Hispania thanks to the Phoenicians, but as the Romans moved inland and established themselves there, the practice extended to many more areas. The regions along the coast naturally did the best business with the Eternal City for practical reasons. They were the closest to the ports, and the roads were nearby that made transportation easier. There are plenty of records that mention wines from Hispania, sometimes referring to their quality or their characteristics. The ones from Andalusia and Catalonia were particularly popular. It's thought that imports were becoming actually so popular that measures had to be taken to limit the amount that could be exported to Rome so as not to damage the Italian wine sector itself. So wine was another contribution. And then you have a product that not everyone knows about, but we should learn about it because it was extremely important. And this was a highly coveted fish sauce condiment known as garum, Garum, which was made with an unappetizing sounding fermented fish guts. You see, basically, you threw in all the intestines and some small fish to boot into a container. Then you would salt the hell out of it, cover it, and put the container in the sun for days, if not weeks, until the right consistency and flavor were obtained. You can only imagine the stench as this sort of rotting mess percolated in the container. But it was very popular, highly prized, and very expensive. The garum was actually categorized into different versions, basically the sauce kind, which was the highest rated, and then sort of the pasty version, sort of the leftovers, which is the low-end kind. And what seems like totally unpalatable to our taste was treated as a fine delicacy back then. And Hispania was a major exporter of this product. It was considered to be the best producer of garum. And if you go to the ruins of the city called Baiello Claudia, it's a former Roman city, just the ruins are there now, and it's in the province of Cadiz. It's right on the beach. It's an amazing place. You can see where the factory was because it was the heart of the local economy. What else? Well, you had herbs and medicinal plants that were grown and sold. Linen grew into a huge business for Hispania. Honey, too. Basically, you name it, they produced and sold it. Now, Iberia, or Hispania, was the source of a large portion of manpower for different reasons. Some not so pleasant, like slaves, often taken as a result of the wars with the Celts and the Iberians. But then soldiers were contracted too. Iberian mercenaries were highly regarded, usually because they specialized in a particular kind of warfare. The people from the Balearic Islands, by that I'm talking about Mallorca, Ibiza, and those places, were employed because they were outstanding slingshot users. Julius Caesar took them along for his campaign in Gaul. And then you could find, for example, Cantabrians in Judea, Asturians atop Hadrian's Wall. Many units included the names of these regions since the troops were from there. And that's just talking about the masses, the anonymous, who were many. But what about those people whose names live on today? A number of very well-known individuals in history from that age were born in Hispania. Now, did that make them Spanish? That's a good question. For the most part, they were actually Italian families, but they now resided in Hispania. And it is assumed that in some cases, they actually married with locals. For the most part, they would probably have considered themselves more Roman than anything else. But they were born in the provinces and would obviously carry with them baggage and characteristics and even a way of speaking that would be typical of that area. In any event, who were some of the most illustrious individuals? Let me tell you, because you'll be surprised when you hear this. To begin with, you have emperors. Yes, you heard right. Of the 70 rulers during the Roman Empire, 3 were natives of Hispania. Now, that doesn't sound like many, but in this case, it's not quantity that matters, but rather quality, because these weren't any ordinary emperors. Let's see who they were. First, you had Trajan, no less, who was born around 56 AD. They're not exactly sure when it was, in a city called Italica, which was founded by the Romans and is just outside present-day Seville in the south of Spain. When he was young, his family moved back to Rome. Now, if you're a little rough on your Roman emperors, now let me tell you a little bit more about who Trajan was. Let's just say that he has gone down in history as one of the most highly rated emperors of the Roman age and one of the greatest leaders in history. If you look at rankings for what they're worth, most times you will see him just behind Augustus, but on occasion he actually tops the list. He was one of the 5 good emperors, a term used to describe a succession of emperors who were particularly effective during the 2nd century AD. And Trajan's reputation is regarded as nothing less than stellar. In fact, he was declared by the Senate as Optimus Princeps, or the best ruler. And for centuries, senators would bestow upon the new emperors the blessing, "May you be more fortunate or more lucky than Augustus and better than Trajan." In other words, he was the standard of what a great leader should be, and he did so by earning the admiration of his armies. He was also beloved by the common people for the way he treated them. He is said to have created welfare programs for the populace. He even, for example, devalued the silver denarius to help pay for public works, food, and subsidized education for the poor, as well as other events. He was also good at working with the Senate, and that earned him their respect. He knew how to be a leader, I guess, have the authority that he needed when it was needed, but he didn't ignore the Senate, and that was considered to be a smart move. Basically, there was no one quite like him. Did that have anything to do with a childhood nurtured on gazpacho and paella? Who knows? As I was mentioning before, at least some of the family was Italian. It is believed that possibly some of his ancestors would have been locals and that possibly they had to be reinstated as citizens at one point. But anyway, he is believed to have left when he was 10 years old, and his reign lasted from 98 AD to 117, I believe. It is hard to sum up the praise scholars and writers have had for this ruler over the centuries. Trajan was simply that good. His cousin would succeed him, and he was also from Italica. And his name should also sound familiar to us for a reason that has nothing to do with Spain. We're talking about none other than Hadrian, the one and only Hadrian, who has reached our days as being the one who ordered the building of the immense wall that spanned across the north of England. But Hadrian was much more than that, and he is often up there on the list of greatest of all time, even though he clearly had a tough act to follow by succeeding Trajan. Hadrian was a traveling leader, which was unusual for that period. He eventually visited nearly every province in the empire. He was also a notable builder. In addition to his famous wall, he was also behind the reconstruction of the iconic Pantheon, one of the most important architectural structures and feats of all time. His reign lasted from 117 to 138. Then we have to skip a few centuries before we get to Theodosius, who is said to have been born in the province of Segovia, in a town today known as Coca, which is famous for a castle. He ruled very late in the game for the empire, from 379 to 395, but he goes down in history as being the last emperor to rule over the entire empire before it was divided into two. He was also the one who established Christianity as sort of the official religion of the state. Other figures of note include Seneca, the famous statesman, orator, playwright, and philosopher. Seneca was born in what is today the city of Cordoba, a town which has always been important throughout the ages. He left for Rome at a very young age, and when he grew up, he became the tutor of the future ruler, Nero. And then when Nero became emperor, he was a close advisor to him, I believe between 54 and 62 AD. But he was also probably most remembered for being a major part of the Stoic school of philosophy. Stoicism relied heavily on virtue as the cornerstone of living one's life. If we were trying to find a meaning to life, living a virtuous one was the key. He also was a writer, as we said. He wrote philosophical works and plays, often discussing and analyzing moral problems. There's also another writer from Hispania known as Martial. He was born in Aragon. Martial specialized in a kind of short, often witty poem called an epigram. In fact, when you think of epigrams, which is probably not too often, but when you do, you should be thinking of Martial because I think he was quite possibly the most famous. Epigrams are not necessarily side-splitting poems, but they are humorous. And Martial's were also particularly caustic and sarcastic. He was a no-holds-barred kind of artist, which is what I like about him. And he mingled in some of the most important circles of Rome. As he said, he was born in Aragon around 40 AD in a town or near a town which today is known as Calatayud. Back then they had a very different name for it called Augustus Bibulus, which is why the residents of Calatayud today sometimes go by the curious name as Bilbilitanos. He lived, as we said, in the first century and was probably from a Roman family, but I think he claimed he was very proud of sort of his Iberian or Celtic origins, at least in terms of native land. If we move on to sports, Diocles, considered by many to be the greatest charioteer of all time in ancient history and probably the highest paid, was born in Hispania, but in Lusitania, which would be modern-day Portugal. He most likely got his fantastic career started in Catalonia, which would be Spain. So we will give Spain sort of partial credit for that one, but they can't take full credit. So those are some of the big names who made contributions to Rome. There would obviously be others because the relationship between the two would last for centuries. As we mentioned, Rome successfully established itself in Hispania, pacified it, built it, and reaped the benefits for many centuries. But the empire, towards the last couple of centuries, which had held together quite well for so long, was beginning to come apart at the seams. And with it, the loss of its centralizing power. And the provinces would become disoriented and helpless when trying to stave off the multiple waves of tribes and peoples from other parts of Europe who began to invade. These would include lesser-known peoples like the Alans and Suebi, and other more familiar ones like the Vandals and eventually the Visigoths. But that, my friends, is for another episode. In fact, probably the next one, if everything goes according to schedule. We'll stop for the moment and take a breather. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast by Brian Spain Domain. Please feel free to leave us with any comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Apple, and Castos. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, click on our PayPal donate button or check us out at Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.